Welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News for Tuesday, October 17th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. And the focus of the program today is the realization that the Gaza Strip, which is described as an open-air prison camp, is a pilot program for globalist mass enslavement and then mass extermination of all human ethnic groups. And that what Israel has done to the Palestinian people is an experiment run by globalists, or with the complicity of Zionist globalists, to determine the best way to displace, to enslave, to capture, oppress, and then exterminate ultimately billions of people by designating them as animals and starving them to death and depriving them of basic human dignity and the essentials of human life. That's what's going on, folks. That's what has been going on for decades, well, generations. And so what I'm going to lay out for you here is a much more detailed analysis of what Israel has figured out over all these years in terms of how to brutalize a specific ethnic group, how to enslave them, how to deprive them of human rights, and then how to justify their extermination, because this is a model for globalist extermination of all human beings, including Jews, by the way. So what a lot of people in Israel do not realize is that they are going along with the pilot program that will one day be used against them as well. Because the globalists aren't going to, you know, save the Jews. No, the globalists want to exterminate virtually all human beings on planet Earth right now. This is really a depopulation program. And the other element of today's program that I'll get into is the fact that this extermination through World War III, and we'll talk about that escalation and how war is breaking out, this is also the most strategic cover story to cover up vaccine deaths, or what I have called the vaccine holocaust against humanity. So no one will ever know how many people died from vaccines, because billions will die from the war if the globalists get their way. So those are the two things that we're going to focus on here today. And let me kind of reset here and walk you through the latest developments to get to those key points. Here we go. So now, President Trump, in a speech in Iowa not long ago, I mean a few hours ago, said, "We will aggressively deport resident aliens with jihadist sympathies." So he's talking about identifying and, I guess, rounding up and deporting anyone in America who is a resident alien. That means they're not a citizen, but they have residency, maybe a green card, for example, or a work permit or a student permit or what have you. Rounding them up and deporting them from America. Now, I beg you to join me in looking at the bigger picture here, because it's been 22 years since 9/11. 22 years. And we are now beginning to repeat the same cycle that we saw after the 9/11 attacks, which was what? The government declaring war on Muslims across America. And suddenly Muslims were the enemy, and everybody was supposed to be afraid of Muslims. Remember that? And the government used that excuse to achieve what? Anyone? Bueller? The government used that excuse to roll out an expanded police state, a surveillance state that was later turned against the American people and has been used to weaponize the FBI and the DOJ against Trump supporters and conservatives. So when I hear Trump argue that, quote, "We will aggressively deport resident aliens with jihadist sympathies," as much as I agree on the surface premise of we have to deport terrorists, like actual terrorists, I understand that. But what Trump is pushing us into that smacks of 22 years ago, 9/11, is to turn the government into a new kind of get the Muslims mentality that is designed to ultimately expand the power of the state and to get everybody to live in fear and ultimately to take away the rights of you and I, even if we are not Muslim and we are not jihadis and we are not terrorists. Look what has already happened. I mean, the FBI just a month ago announced it was launching a whole new division to monitor Trump supporters as, quote, extremists. Well, where did they get the authority to do that? Where did they get the laws, the powers? It's post 9/11. And all these powers were supposed to only be used against terrorists. But now the terrorists are you, you see. So be careful. All of us together, all of you listening and myself, be careful when we call for government to have the power to surveil people, to monitor their speech, because how are you going to determine if they have jihadist sympathies? To monitor their speech, to monitor their web surfing, to monitor their emails, to secretly spy on them in their own homes, and then to round them up and deport them. Be careful what you ask for, because those powers will be turned against the Christians. Those powers will be used against Trump supporters, conservatives, gun owners, anybody, journalists who dissent against the current regime in power. That's how those powers of the government will be used. It starts with jihadis, yes, and then it expands to, well, anyone that they don't like, which right now includes white people and Christians and Trump supporters. And I can't help but notice the timing here, 22 years since 9/11. That's about a generation, right? 20 to 25 years considered a generation. So here we are, another generation being told to hate Muslims in America. Watch out for the Muslim. See, now it's going to be the hate Muslims chapter again in America. And, you know, be afraid of your Muslim neighbor. Which reminds me of the video that we played yesterday, which was that 95-year-old Israeli guy. Still shocked me what he said. I played the video for you, where he said that all Jews should take guns and shoot their Arab neighbors, if they have Arab neighbors, that the Jews should just go shoot the Arabs. Like right now. He said it right now. Shoot their women, their children, whatever. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he was saying. Shoot your Arab neighbors. I mean, dude, how do you expect to live in peace with that kind of attitude? It's unreal. And you know, RFK Jr. is out there saying that, of course, he supports whatever military aid, financial aid is necessary for Israel. So Trump is following in the footsteps of Bush in expanding the surveillance police state, and RFK is following in the footsteps, in a way, of neocons who just want to provide more funding to Israel so that Israel can, I don't know what, exterminate all Palestinians and steal more land from Gaza Strip and just colonize that as Israeli land, which is, of course, the entire goal of Zionism. It's designed to displace all Palestinians and take over all of what used to be Palestine before 1948, to take it all over and make it Israel and have zero Palestinians left alive anywhere on the planet. Like that's the actual goal. And you've heard this stated now repeatedly and publicly over the last week. And I've got a lot of updates for you here about the escalation of all of this, because it's really getting out of hand and this is rapidly becoming a World War III scenario. But I do want to mention something. I thought of this today. I thought of how could Americans really understand the brutality that the Palestinian people have been suffering under Israeli rule, with Israel cutting off their food, their water, but even for many years, total embargoes of food supplies, you know, cutting off their escape routes, cutting off the ocean, cutting off land, building a giant wall, you know, as said, a giant open air prison. The brutality that Israelis have shown repeatedly against the Palestinians, I think can only be understood in America if you were to replace the ethnic group of Palestinians in your mind with black people. Because if Black people were rounded up in America and their homes were taken from them. And they were forced into this small piece of land and a giant wall was built around that. And let's say it was called Black Land or the Black Strip instead of Gaza Strip. If it were the Black Strip, and then let's say the white people, again, this is a horrifying, you know, imaginary thought experiment, but it's instructional. If the white people in America rounded up all the black people, put them in the Black Strip, made them prisoners, and then brutally murdered them if they refused to leave their homes elsewhere across America, loaded them onto trucks, forced them into the Black Strip area, unloaded them there, and then starved them to death, and then called them animals and said they were subhuman, then the white people in America would be called, you know, another apartheid. And the black people, prisoners in the Black Strip area, would probably sooner or later, you know, lash out against that because it would be insanely inhumane to do that to black people or any people. But for some reason in America, when that group that has been displaced, that has been brutalized, is called Palestinians, then in the minds of most Americans, it doesn't really register. It doesn't click. Like, oh, who are the Palestinians? Really? They don't know the history. They don't know the group. And then it's very easy for them to be told, well, these are all the terrorists. They're all terrorists. And we have to find them all. And we have to, in the words of like that Israeli military commander, he wants to kill them all. But I don't know of any other ethnic group that's targeted in this way and imprisoned in this way around the world that is ignored by the world in the way that the Palestinians have been ignored. I mean, in California, they talk about paying reparations to black people or descendants of African slaves in America, you know, paying out money, hundreds of billions of dollars to pay to the black people. In Israel, it's the opposite. They take everything from the enslaved, imprisoned ethnic group, which is the Palestinians. They take everything. They're not talking about reparations. It's the opposite. Take everything they own, take their homes, take their land, take their food away, take their electricity, take their water, take away their airport, which they did, take away their right to travel, take away their human dignity, which is exactly what Israel has done to the Palestinian people year after year after year. And do you realize that none of this was really coming to light until this Hamas terrorist attack against Israel? That this pivotal day, which was a day of murder, a day of slaughter, a day that I condemn, of course, completely condemn the actions taken by the Hamas terrorists. I believe that was October 7th. That's a day probably we should never forget. But do you realize that that day actually initiated global awareness of the interaction between Israel and Palestine, the Palestinian people, and now this incredible, this inhumane mass bombing of civilians that is, it's almost unthinkable. In fact, I want to play a video for you here, a short video of the before and after of what Gaza looked like before October 7th versus what it looks like now in certain areas after the IDF has bombed Gaza with thousands upon thousands of bombs, bombing residential buildings, residential districts, killing thousands of Palestinian civilians, literally thousands. It's way over 3,000 by now, including over 500 children have been killed in the Israel bombings, the IDF bombings. But watch this video because it's absolutely shocking. وعين تنزف ماء في فضاء بين فضاء لا مكان له في الوجود. All right, what you saw there on one side was before the bombings and then the other side after the bombings. You can't tell me those are precision strikes just to take out Hamas. No, they're leveling entire city blocks of residential buildings. And that's why there are so many Palestinian civilians that are being killed in this just inhumane slaughter of an entire ethnic group by the nation of Israel. As Al Jazeera reports in an infographic sourced from the WHO and OCHA, O-C-H-A, 64,000 residential units have been damaged in the Gaza Strip, and 5,540 residential units have been completely destroyed. You can't tell me that's all precision strikes of Hamas terrorists. No, they're leveling Gaza. They're destroying residential buildings and killing many innocent civilians on purpose. And then on top of that, we're treated to this insane propaganda where the Western media is reporting that all the civilians, the Palestinian civilians killed in Gaza, are being killed by Hamas, we're told. Yeah, they're being killed by Hamas. But the 6,000 bombs plus dropped by Israel on residential buildings, oh, that hasn't killed any civilians. That's only killed terrorists. The civilians are being killed by Hamas, we're told. I mean, who is dumb enough to believe that? Well, apparently, Breitbart.com is one of them, by the way, because that's what they're reporting. And a lot of Western media, including so-called independent media or alternative media, are falling for that. I mean, this is clearly Western propaganda saying, no, Hamas is killing all the babies and you know, oh, chopping off their heads, which was completely fabricated. There's been no evidence whatsoever that there were 40 Israeli babies found with their heads chopped off. Completely fabricated. In fact, Brian Wilkins at thecovidblog.com has published a very provocative article on this that I think has some really important points. He says, Israel subterfuge. The powers that be break out heavy artillery propaganda to cover the vaccine genocide and commence the second great genocide earlier than expected. So what a convenient way to cover up the vaccine deaths of Israelis by, of course, calling up 300,000 reservists and having them killed in military operations in Gaza. Well, that's one way to cover up all the vaccine deaths. You know, Israel is one of the most vaccinated countries in the world because the Israeli people are incredibly obedient to a genocidal government, it turns out. They went right along with it. And the deaths in Israel from the vaccines, of course, dwarf the deaths that have been caused by Hamas in terms of raw numbers. No question about that. But now it's all going to be lost in the middle of this holy war. No one will ever know what are the actual vaccine deaths because, of course, death is what the globalists are inflicting upon everybody on a grand scale that will dwarf the vaccine deaths. Now it's going to be, you know, holy war deaths, war, explosions, maybe a nuclear weapon. And that's how they will get away, the globalists, this is how they'll get away with the genocidal crimes of releasing biological weapons onto Jews. You understand? So yes, the vaccine holocaust specifically targeted Jewish people in Israel with a genocidal biological weapon that was endorsed by the government. But those deaths will now be blanketed or covered up or clouded by the deaths that are happening from this holy war. So Brian Wilkins writes, quote, critical thinking is crucial when talking about Israel since the U.S. government, media, and the majority of Americans fawn over Zionists like horny 80s teenage boys around any girl who paid attention to them. It's already difficult existing in a country where two cults, he calls MAGA and LGBTV, control more than 80% of the population. But both cults, he says, worship the same Zionist God, rendering truth an entity with no homeland. For this article, he writes, we must put aside the fact that Israel had murdered at least 6,407 Palestinians from January 2008 to September 2023 versus the 308 Israelis killed in Israel's ongoing apartheid endeavors, and that's according to the United Nations, the OCHA, OCHA, casualties numbers. Everyone must cry when an Israeli dies, he says, while Palestinians are labeled terrorists and subhuman. If you don't cry for Israel, you are anti-Semitic. You're a Holocaust denier or an N-word, he says, which he writes the N-word that I can't say because I don't have the allowable skin color to say that word. But it's not the word Nazis. It's the other N-word. Anyway, he follows that with a comma and then Nazis and nihilists. And he writes the following: we must put aside the fact that Israel openly and proudly admits to being a safe haven for Zionist pedophiles and sexual predators to flee to in order to escape criminal prosecution in the U.S. or elsewhere. And we must put off the Talmudic rabbinic tradition of Metzizah Bapeh, when infant boys get their penises sliced with razors and a male religious leader orally sucks the blood off. He writes, it is what it is. Bloody baby blowjobs in the name of their God. I told you this was a provocative article. I warned you. And he goes on to say that all mainstream media are owned by members of the Zionist cult. They openly admit that, but you're not allowed to say it for whatever reason. He says, we're already banned from every mainstream platform, and even if we weren't, we'd never sacrifice journalistic integrity for a cult. So those are some pretty strong words there from thecovidblog.com. But he makes some important points, such as the fact that, well, most of America on the left and the right, they are. We've seen this now over the last, 10 days, they are completely obedient to the whims of Israel and Zionism. You know, we've seen it with Breitbart.com and many other independent media outlets as well. And those of us who are just trying to be objective in this, like myself, someone who is a humanitarian, who cares about humanity, who believes that it's wrong to murder babies of any ethnicity, and who believes in the dignity of every human life. Black lives do matter, but so do all lives, right? And you're not allowed to say that anywhere in America right now. Black lives do matter, but so do all other lives. Palestinian lives matter. Israeli lives matter. Jewish lives matter. You know, Native American lives matter, and so on. I have principles that are universal, but we live in a world of tribalism, of supremacy, even we've seen lately Zionist supremacy, and where people are openly calling for genocide, mass killing, ethnic cleansing, slaughter, murder of other groups that they don't like. And then just to wrap up this article from Brian Wilkins, he writes the following. He says, quote, Zionism is the root of all evil on earth. It's the political philosophy that is at the heart of the Great Reset and the vaccine genocide, subterfuge, manipulation, propaganda, and murder, he says, equals Trump, vaccines, Ukraine, and homosexual culture. Earth is the biblical hell. Again, very, very provocative statements. But what we are seeing right now is some confirmations from people on the Israeli side that they believe in a kind of Zionist supremacy, that they alone have the divine right to this land that was all Palestine before 1948. Of course, if you go back, you know, 2000 years, well, then it gets very convoluted, and it's the Canaanites and, you know, it's the Assyrians and it's, and at some point it's the Romans and, you know, it swishes hands many, many times. And, you know, the Israelites have their origins and they were punished by God and so on. But I'm talking about just recently, 1948. Before that, this was all Palestine. But the Israelis believe that it should all be theirs and that it is their divine right to slaughter all Palestinian people and to take that land for themselves, and then, of course, to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and rebuild a new temple there, which, as I understand it, is also a sign that the end times are fully underway. Now, one of the reasons I mentioned that article from the COVID blog is because the headline hits on something really critical, whether you agree or disagree with what Brian Wilkins wrote about Zionism and Israelis in general, from the globalist point of view, their vaccine genocide attempt really has not succeeded to the extent that they hoped. And they need what Brian Wilkins calls the second great genocide to begin, quote, earlier than expected. This is the Holy War, World War III. And this is why the United States is pushing for rapid escalation. And this is why Israel is just, you know, they can't wait to go in and blow this thing up into a holy war. The only reason they're even delaying is because of pressure from, you know, the UN and the WHO and other nations about humanitarian issues, and some pressure from certain quarters in the United States as well. But Israel wants to go in full force right now. So this is all being set up as an ignition of world war, a war that will devastate so many lives and kill so many people that nobody will remember the vaccine genocide that took place first. That's a point that Brian Wilkins is making that I think is very valid. Regardless, again, regardless of what you think of the rest of what he writes, that point is very, very valid. Now, I want to read you some things that happened in the last 24 hours that point to this. From the OSINT Defender account, which is on, it's both on Twitter and also Telegram, by the way. According to the Iranian foreign minister, there could be, quote, preemptive measures taken by what they call the Axis of Resistance against Israel in the coming hours. The Axis of Resistance includes Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah, as well as any anti-Western or anti-Israeli militia groups across the Middle East, which are under their control. So that's all part of the quote. And then what I wrote about this, I tweeted this out. Effectively, this means that Iran or Hezbollah may initiate a preemptive strike against Israel even before Israel goes full force into Gaza. But understand that what we had thought before today was that Hezbollah, which is in northern Israel, southern Lebanon, was waiting for Israel to commit its military forces to Gaza before Hezbollah launches its assault from the north, thereby finding Israel obviously a lot less prepared for that assault because they're engaged in what's going on in Gaza and probably losing, you know, thousands of IDF soldiers in Gaza and many, many tanks and armored vehicles and so on because of the super bombs that we mentioned yesterday. I've got more analysis for you in that area that's really critical. So stay tuned. More intel from today. The Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, has stated that if a ground invasion of Gaza occurs, that Iran will, quote, open up the gates of hell against Israel. You can only imagine what that means, given that Iran does have crude nuclear weapons at this point, thanks to Obama, like I've said before. So Iran can, they have nuclear weapons that they can put into a vehicle and just drive it into the middle of some area and set it off. I don't think Iran yet has nuclear weapons that they can deliver on, you know, ballistic missiles, for example. Even though Iran does have missiles that can reach Israel, they can reach Tel Aviv with missiles. Those are still conventional explosive missiles. I don't believe they've engineered nuclear warheads onto those missiles, but there's no doubt in my mind that they have nuclear weapons, kind of crude nuclear weapons, where a suicide crew driving a van or a transport truck with a nuclear weapon on board could just drive it in into Israel, into Tel Aviv, and detonate it as a giant nuclear suicide action and take out an entire city. Now, keep that in mind when I read the next headline for you from the Postmillennial. Four Iranian, quote, special interest aliens have been apprehended by Border Patrol in the United States attempting to cross into the U.S. in October. And this was at the Texas border. They were processed as, quote, special interest aliens. So these are Iranian nationals Let's see. One was an Iranian man in his 40s detained in Eagle Pass, Texas. That Iranian has received the special interest alien label due to the nation of origin because the U.S. government deems Iran as, quote, having conditions that promote or protect terrorism and potentially pose some sort of national security threat to the U.S. In addition, two Lebanese citizens were arrested in Eagle Pass last week, also designated special interest aliens. And of course, Lebanon is home of Hezbollah, as we've talked about here. And then there was an Egyptian man in his 40s and so on. There's some other descriptions here. But remember what I said that my intel sources had given me about the wide open U.S. border, that Middle Eastern terrorists were going to cross into the United States across the open border, and they were going to be given explosive vests and in some cases dirty bomb vests that were engineered. Where? Quiz time. Remember what I said a year ago? They were engineered in Iran. It's Iranian engineers that built the vests, both the kinetic explosive vests as well as the dirty bomb vests. But my intel sources said that the terrorists that would smuggle the vests and use them in America were from Afghanistan primarily, but also Syria secondarily. But Afghanistani recruited terrorists wearing explosive vests engineered by Iranian engineers. That's what's coming into the United States. In fact, that's what's already here, already in the U.S. And folks, do you realize that when Israel moves on Gaza, that's like go time for every, you know, I mean, every radicalized Muslim terrorist that is already in the U.S. or Europe or anywhere. And we've already seen some brutal stabbings by, you know, radicalized Islamic terrorists in Europe and other cities. I think one happened in China a couple of days ago. You're going to see bombings probably in America carried out by definitely a radical Islamic terrorist. So then knowing that, you might say, well, Mike, for God's sake, why don't you agree with Trump that you should round up everybody with jihadist tendencies? Well, I already explained. The issue is, are you just going to approve endless government surveillance and spying on everybody and checkpoints at the grocery stores and a lockdown of society in order to get the jihadis, when what's really happening is we're all going to end up in an open-air prison like Gaza? We're all going to be Gaza prisoners. In fact, there's a very strong argument right now that the globalists use Israel to run Gaza as an open air experiment for, you know, many years now, decades, in order to test what works for imprisoning large numbers of people in a totally controlled open air prison situation. Because this is what's going to be rolled out in the United States, in Canada, in Australia, in New Zealand, that the Gaza Strip is a test case. It's a pilot program for imprisoning masses of human beings and then controlling their food, controlling their water, controlling all their commerce and internet access and everything, agricultural operations, water, you name it. That's what it has been about, according to many analysts, that it's about a giant experiment to see how to imprison and then ultimately exterminate millions of people, if not billions, on a global scale. So really, the Gaza Strip, I mean, what Israelis did to the Palestinians, Israelis show up in 1948. They go door to door, breaking in doors, brutally murdering people who resist them, loading up Palestinians on trucks, relocating them to Gaza, taking their land, and then forcing them into Gaza for these generations. And then, of course, over the years, Israel keeps expanding. But during this entire time, they are testing military weapon systems. They're testing surveillance systems. They're testing social engineering and social control systems. They are perfecting the enslavement of large populations of human civilians. And now the lessons learned by Israel in how to manage and suppress millions of people, those lessons have become globalist principles. And you've heard about this already in something called 15-minute cities. Remember that? Or 20-minute cities. I've heard it both ways. Agenda 2030. What is a 15-minute city? It's like living in Gaza. It's where you are a prisoner. You have no right to transportation. You have no right to leave. Everything is controlled and measured and surveilled, which is what Trump is talking about, actually putting in place in America to surveil the American people in order to catch the jihadis. But you're going to be trapped as a slave prisoner in a 15-minute city. You will eat the bugs, right? You will have no free speech. You will have no access to any websites that are not pre-approved. All your information will be controlled. Your education will be controlled. You'll be in engineered poverty and mass starvation. Your water will be controlled and probably poisoned. You know, your sky is going to be seeded with chemtrails. You're going to be a total slave, and then ultimately extermination. So that's what this is. This is a model. This is a model for globalist extermination of ultimately billions of people. That is, anybody that they haven't killed already in the war that's being set off. All right, now we're going to shift gears just a little bit. Secretary of State Antony Blinken did meet with the Israeli war cabinet for 8 hours yesterday. And in that meeting, a lot of negotiations. And to my shock, by the way, it's being reported that the United States was ordering Israel to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza before Israel commences its full-blown assault on Gaza. I was shocked to hear this because I know the United States, well, the lunatics in charge, they want to explode this into World War III as quickly as possible. But there's so much heat, there's so much pushback against the genocide of the Palestinian people, the ethnic cleansing, the bombing of hospitals, the cutting off the water, cutting off the electricity, the civilian deaths, and so on. There's so much pushback that the U.S. had to ask Israel to pause. And so I just want to say for all of you who are pushing back against genocide, you and I, in doing that, we have already achieved something, which is a delay in Israel's attempted kinetic ethnic cleansing of the Gaza Strip. And that delay will save lives. That delay will translate into more people being able to flee and also more aid being able to make it in there. And it was reported that there were many aid trucks that were allowed into Gaza today, I think through the southwestern entrance that Gaza shares with Egypt. I believe that's where they came in. But there are some trucks with humanitarian aid that are making it into Gaza. Not enough, but some. And so there are some number of people who are being saved, who are civilians, some number of women, some number of children who are being reached with medical supplies or water so they don't die from dehydration. And this is not on the part of Israel doing this. Israel just wants to go in there and slaughter them all, murder them all. They openly call for it. Netanyahu, Gallant, all of them. Just mass slaughter. This is happening. The aid is happening because of, believe it or not, like I said, Blinken, the U.S. State Department, and Joe Biden's fear that he will lose public support if Israel slaughters more Palestinian children, and it turns out that the U.S. supported that. So this is a political calculation, not a human calculation on the part of Antony Blinken. Just want to be clear. But there's also pressure from the WHO, from the United Nations, and of course from Iran and from Russia and other countries. Russia tried to pass a UN resolution today calling for peace and de-escalation, but of course that was voted down in the United Nations, which we all knew that would happen. But Russia at least is on the record saying, let's all stop killing each other here. Now, the Iranian foreign minister, who I quoted earlier, has also said, quote, time for political solutions is running out. And the possibility of expanding war is approaching inevitably. And then later, the foreign minister said, quote, and again, this is a translation, obviously, into English, but all possibilities are possible and we cannot be indifferent to the war crimes committed against the people of Gaza. So the foreign minister of Iran is really starting to spice up his talk. Hamas also announced sometime yesterday that there are 6,000 male and female prisoners in Israeli prisons that they want freed in exchange for the Israeli captives. So understand that Israel has, of course, abducted and imprisoned thousands of Palestinians over the years. And surely some of them are Hamas terrorists. Some of them are probably guilty of acts of terrorism. But there are others who are not, because, you know, Israel's brutal treatment of the Palestinian people includes jailing those who are a political threat to Israel. And that is a tactic being used in the United States as well. Owen Schroyer, for example, the InfoWars reporter, has been sentenced to 60 days in jail for his speech crimes related to January 6th. And he's being ordered to report in, I believe, 7 days to serve that sentence. And the court disallowed any appeal, or disallowed a suspension of serving the sentence during his appeal. They said, nope, you have to show up and you have to serve a 60-day sentence. And then also the IRS sent him a notice that says he owes the IRS everything that he owns, $300,000 in, I guess, back taxes. I don't know all the details of that, but Owen was talking about that today. So he's about to go to jail, and the IRS is going to take everything he owns. That's the cost of speaking freely in America, or being known as someone who dissents against the regime in power. Well, Israel does that. They have done that for years against Palestinians. So that's why there are 6,000 prisoners in Israeli prisons that Hamas once released. All right. And also then the Iranian ambassador to Lebanon had backed up what the Iranian foreign minister said. He said, quote, take the warnings issued by the Iranian foreign minister very seriously. In other words, he's saying that this is real. This is about to get real. And then at the same time, and this was covered by MarketWatch.com and many other, you know, Reuters and so on, the Pentagon has issued prepare to deploy orders to 2,000 U.S. troops. And then we learn later in the day that the U.S. is sending 2,000 Marines from the Rapid Reaction Brigade to the shores of Israel. And that's from CNN. So the U.S. is activating 2,000 troops. And you know what that means, because if U.S. troops go in and start fighting for Israel, I mean, what are they going to do? Have these Marines go into Gaza? Seriously? And get blown up by the Gaza superbombs? Well, you know what this is going to trigger. This is going to trigger Hezbollah, Iran, Russia, maybe Turkey. Who knows if China gets involved? I mean, U.S. boots on the ground in Israel, this is going to set off all kinds of horrific events, escalations. But this is clearly a provocation by the United States. You see what I'm saying? This is being done on purpose to try to spark a much larger regional war to ensnare Iran. Remember the goal here from the point of view of the United States. Ultimately, the U.S. wants to nuke Iran and destroy Iran's nuclear weapons programs capabilities. That is one of the key elements in the U.S. military. But that contradicts what Barack Obama did, and Barack Obama's running Joe Biden. Barack Obama has provided funding, you know, or did so, to enable Iran to gain nuclear weapons. And Joe Biden has, of course, sent Iran or approved $6 billion for Iran, if not more, so that Iran can have nuclear weapons. So, you know, there are elements within the Pentagon and within the State Department that want a wider war. But then there's also elements higher, like Barack Obama, that wants Iran to destroy Israel and destroy the United States, both. So it's interesting that there are conflicting missions or priorities, even among all the traitors who either want to see America compromised or destroyed, or who want to betray humanity by starting World War III for all kinds of other reasons, one of which is to cover up all the vaccine deaths. But of course, there are also additional reasons. But U.S. troops are about to be deployed, folks. U.S. boots on the ground in Israel fighting Hamas. And this is going to escalate very quickly. All right. And then Zero Hedge reports the U.S. must be ready for simultaneous wars with China, Russia. A bipartisan report warns. This was a congressionally appointed bipartisan panel said on Thursday, and this was reported by Reuters, that the U.S. must prepare for possible simultaneous wars with Russia and China. By expanding its conventional forces and enhancing its nuclear weapons modernization program. This report came from the Strategic Posture Commission. Yeah, strategic postures, including downward dog and... I'm thinking yoga postures, hold on. So this report says the U.S. and its allies must be ready to deter and defeat both adversaries simultaneously... Again, Russia and China simultaneously, and the U.S.-led international order and the values it upholds, insert laughter here, what values? Child trafficking, child mutilations, transgenderism, lying, propaganda, you know, censorship, money laundering, fraud, false flags, terrorism. Yeah, that's the U.S.-led international order right there. And the values it upholds are at risk from the Chinese and Russian authoritarian regimes. I mean, what a laughable statement. My God. Talk about an authoritarian regime. Look at the U.S. Now, do I have to point out the obvious in this, that the U.S. couldn't defeat Russia in Ukraine? The U.S. has run out of munitions for the most part. So has Western Europe. The U.S. ability to manufacture munitions or even, you know, javelin anti-tank missiles or artillery rounds and so on, it is, it's laughable. I think right now the U.S. can manufacture something like 11,000 rounds of 155 artillery per month. There are days when Russia fired multiples of that. There are days where Russia fired 50,000 rounds. And Russia's manufacturing capability is probably much closer to 100,000 rounds a month, if not more, whereas the U.S. is 11,000 rounds a month. So the U.S. can't even compete in artillery or nuclear weapons. The U.S. has no functioning hypersonic missiles. The U.S. doesn't have the affordable kamikaze drones. I mean, the U.S. doesn't have ICBMs with hyperglide reentry vehicles. The U.S. is decades behind on nuclear weapons, decades behind Russia. And Russia also has a nuclear-powered cruise missile. I don't mean a nuclear warhead. I mean a nuclear power plant. There's a nuclear plant on it that keeps that cruise missile aloft indefinitely. It can fly around in the air for years, powered by nuclear fuel, and then it can just drop down and strike whatever target at any time. It can fly around in the atmosphere for years. Russia's been working on that, and it looks like they've figured out how to make it work. Now, I got to say that anybody who thinks that the U.S. can simultaneously defeat Russia and China is smoking some serious weed or something way more powerful. I mean, even if you had the money to fight such a war, you don't have the munitions, and you don't have the soldiers, you don't have the personnel, you don't even have the culture in America any longer of capable people who give a damn about anything. The culture is gone. And by the way, this is something that Israel suffers from as well. You know, Israel has become a, like, just a materially obsessed capitalist society of consumers and TikTok video makers who really don't give a crap about much of anything except themselves. It's a bunch of narcissists, which is also true with most of the U.S. youth. Not all of them, but most of them. They don't have passion for anything that counts. They're just consumers. They're not producers. They're not manufacturers. They don't want to work. And they don't have courage. They're not driven by anything internally. They're just kind of drifting along like snowflakes through life. NPCs, as we sometimes say. And yeah, you can recruit those people. You can force them to serve in the military. Yeah, slap a uniform on an NPC, and you can call them a soldier. But they're not really a fighter. You see what I'm saying? Whereas in the case of, Hezbollah or Hamas, and of course, I don't agree with their tactics, just to be clear. I don't agree with their philosophy because they also want total extermination of all Israeli people. And I'm obviously opposed to any kind of extermination talk, but Hamas and Hezbollah, they're not NPCs. They are people who vehemently believe in their mission. They're willing to die for it. They share a common goal of fighting for what they believe in, they are not focused on consumerism and TikTok videos and video games and all kinds of other crap. They are truly jihadi fighters who are willing to die for their cause. Now, compare that to the snowflakes that now comprise the U.S. military and the IDF. There's no comparison. You know, all the bombs in the world can't make up for the internal drive that a soldier force or even a terrorist force has to carry out what they see as their mission, their goals. And this is because the culture of the West has collapsed. It has devolved into this insane narcissism and consumerism, this total lack of values. So when Janet Yellen comes along, and this is another story, this is from Information Liberation, Janet Yellen says America can absolutely afford another war. She said America can certainly afford to stand with Israel and to support Israel's military needs, and we can also and must support Ukraine in its struggle against Russia. She says, we do need to come up with funds for both Israel and for Ukraine. This is a priority. So wait a second. How? Oh, print more money. Print more money, Janet Yellen. She's a financial terrorist. She's like a money-printing jihadi. You know what I mean? Just printing money, burning down the whole country. Well, she's insane. And by the way, she's not very bright either. Just in reality, she's a low IQ person. But she kind of fell into this position through, well, a number of things, a number of causes we won't go into here. She's not very bright. She thinks you can print endless money and have no negative repercussions. So she thinks you can print trillions and that printing money will defeat Russia, which has already been proven to be false. And she thinks you can also print money to aid Israel and defeat Hamas. And I'm wondering how many trillions that's going to take. And then I'm wondering, well, how many more trillions do you think it's going to take to defeat Hezbollah? What are you going to do, smother them with dollar bills? What, I mean, you can print money, but you can't print artillery. You know, you can't print soldiers with passion. You can't print a culture of people who care about what they're fighting for. And you can't print aircraft. You can't print artillery. You can't print tanks. I mean, not yet. We don't have, you know, sci-fi, alien tech, metallic 3D printers that print tanks yet. Maybe one day we will. But today you don't. You can print money, but it doesn't give you weapons of war, and it doesn't instill in your military the will to fight, because they don't care about anything. They don't care about what they're fighting for. Half the people now being recruited by the military, they don't give a crap about America. Now, the older veterans in the military, they do love America. I mean, they cared about America, but most of them are retired now, or at least on the path to retirement. So what's left behind are the woke globalists at the top, like Lloyd Austin, or you might say Lord Austin, because he thinks he's God. And then the woke snowflake, America-hating soldiers at the bottom, who don't give a crap about anything and will be virtually pointless on the battlefield. That's what you have now as the primary makeup of the militaries of the United States, and also, to a large extent, Israel. Although there are exceptions to this. There are committed, passionate people who are still in the IDF, no doubt about it. But the younger recruits are not the same cut of person. They don't have the same integrity, the same courage, the same drive. Not at all. And then the question becomes, well, how many trillions do you have to print to defeat Hezbollah? And then what if Iran attacks? Well, how many trillions does it take to defeat Iran? And how does that work, by the way? You just crank up like the spreadsheet of the Treasury and you pull up, you know, column, you know, G4 or whatever, and column, you know, cell number G4, you just add zeros to it. Oh, 1 quadrillion. You just put in like, you know, 27 zeros. Okay, now we've just defeated Iran. How does that work? You created money out of nothing, but it doesn't defeat anything, does it? It doesn't actually stop Iran's soldiers. It doesn't stop Russia's hypersonic missiles, does it? Oh, we have column H5. we're going to put a big number in column H5. We're going to call it, this is the money printing to defeat Russia. It's going to be 9 followed by 37 zeros. It's a quintillion, quadruplet, quad-Google iplet, whatever. Oh, that's going to defeat Russia. That's how much money we have now. How's that going to defeat Russia? You still don't have hypersonic missiles. You still don't have anti-air defense systems that work against Russia's missiles. You still don't have Jack. You still don't have 155 artillery rounds. Low-tech stuff. You still can't make it. So Janet Yellen is a fool. She's a fool. Oh yeah, we can afford another war. No, you can't afford the war you're in. In fact, Janet, you can't even afford to not have a war because your country's $33 trillion in debt. Your border's wide open. Your cities are falling apart. Your economy is a wreck on purpose. Your infrastructure is being sabotaged every day. Your policies are destroying the energy infrastructure of this country. You know, the elections are rigged. The media is fake. Your government pushes big tech to engage in censorship. And you think printing money is going to solve all these problems and defeat China and Russia and Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran? I mean, it's a clown show. These are clowns. Janet Yellen is a gray-haired clown. Low IQ clown, man. It's just, these are some of the dumbest people that have ever served in these positions. Do I even need to describe Joe Biden or Kamala, for God's sake? You know, the combined IQs of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Janet Yellen is under 100. I give them each maybe 33. Altogether, 99. And that's like 3 times 33 degree masonry or whatever that is. That's it. That's all they have. That's how dumb these people are. And reality is not going to support their insanity. Now, let me read for you this, what's being reported as a leaked memo in the U.S. military from General Daniel R. Hokanson, the Chief National Guard Bureau. Now, I can't absolutely confirm the authenticity of this letter, but I did look up the existence of this person, and it's true. Daniel Robert Hokanson, born in 1963, a four-star general in the United States Army, and he serves as the 29th Chief of the National Guard Bureau. And he's a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So here's the memo allegedly from him. Subject: troop sentiment regarding Israel. Here's the memo. Get a load of this. I want to set up a meeting to discuss something concerning I'm hearing from Tony. I think he's talking about maybe Antony Blinken. Perhaps. I'm not sure about that. But apparently, he writes, there is growing anti-Semitism among the enlisted troops who are openly stating they're against Israel and not willing to put their lives on the line for them. I'm chuckling because, see what I said, that they're narcissists. This is the culture of America's youth today. It's just about them. They want to make TikTok videos and be YouTubers, and that's it. They don't give a crap about America or Israel, by the way. Those are my comments, not Hokanson. But continuing with Hokanson's letter, quote, with Trump's remarks against Netanyahu on Wednesday, this problem is only going to get worse. We need to come up with a strategy to deal with this and rally the troops in support of Israel against Hamas. I think it best we try to get ahead of this, as Tony believes it is becoming an issue. When I spoke to Ori, that's O-R-I, shortly after the attack, he expressed concerns about the Republicans in Congress and if they would hinder full support from the U.S. He's talking about support for Israel. I tried to assuage his concerns, but he's not wrong. CENTCOM told me Tuberville's hold is having a major impact on their operations. He's talking about the hold on funding from the Senate. CENTCOM has limited forces and was not expecting a hot war to break out in the region. This, combined with the lack of confirmed leadership positions, means CENTCOM, listen carefully, CENTCOM will not be able to support Israel should this turn into a multi-front war if Hezbollah enters the fray. To be honest, if Hezbollah or other players enter the war, Israel won't be able to defend themselves either. Let's pray that doesn't happen. Let me know if you have suggestions, and let's try to get the key players together for a meeting on Monday. Now, to be clear, this letter has not been confirmed by the U.S. military or the National Guard. It's possible it could be faked, and so I do want to be clear about that here. It's not able to be confirmed. According to news agencies and websites that are associated with Arab forces and more jihadi forces, they claim something called the Resistance Front obtained this correspondence, and they did that by hacking one of the internal messaging systems of the U.S. National Guard, they claim. And that this was sent October 13th, 2023, just a few days ago. All right. So it could be deliberate disinformation. You know, it could be a counterfeit letter. The thing is, we'll never know, because this regime is engaged in so much censorship and lying and propaganda that even if this is real, they would never tell us. They would never confirm it, and they would just cover up all the news. In fact, if you try to search this news out there, you're not going to find much of anything on it. So take it with a grain of salt. We're trying to get you the best information we can, but as you know, the first casualty in war is the truth. And so what both sides are putting out here, just like we saw with Ukraine and Russia, both sides are putting out just a lot of propaganda. Now, let me bring you something from the Jerusalem Post, which is largely a pro-Israeli publication. Here it is. Headline: Why has the Gaza ground invasion been delayed since Friday? Analysis. And essentially, from this story, they're claiming that Hezbollah is waiting for the IDF to commit its ground forces to Gaza. And then at that point, Hezbollah would attack. Or at least they would be poised to attack at that point. So once Israel invades Gaza, though, that'll be a trigger point for many other things to happen, including what Iran's foreign minister has threatened, which is opening the gates of hell. Whatever that looks like. I don't know. If you open the gates of hell, do you open them over a city? Is it in the sky? Is it like in the Avengers? Is it like a portal in the sky? Or is it in the ground? Is it underneath the ground? A giant chasm opens up and fire breathes up from the depths, and then you fall into the gates of hell. I would like to ask the Iranian foreign minister to please demonstrate what kind of gates of hell is he talking about. Are they in the sky or in the ground, or is it just on the street? Like, oh, here's turn right. Those are the gates of hell. You're going to go into those gates right there. I don't know what kind of gates of hell he's talking about. But getting back to this Jerusalem Post article, here's something important. The author writes that Palestinians will be killed as soon as Israel attacks Gaza, you know, a lot of Palestinians. And he says, quote, despite the IDF's attempts to avoid civilian casualties. And then he writes, the second that those numbers balloon, he's talking about the casualties, which will likely be when the invasion starts in a real way, there will be powerful U.S. and world pressure to stop. Also, the Post, talking about the Jerusalem Post, has confirmed from many sources that no one has yet decided what will happen to Gaza after the IDF will supposedly topple Hamas's rule. See, that's like I was talking about earlier. There's no plan. Israel has no plan. The U.S. has no plan. Their only plan right now is just attack. That's it. They're not thinking about the ramifications. Well, what happens next? What do you do with 2 million displaced Palestinians? I mean, where are those people going to go? Are you just going to slaughter them too? And then the condemnation against Israel would be loud and global, obviously, because most people in the world do not support genocide, it turns out, as the Israelis are calling for, right? And then this author writes that this and all of the other above factors have left top Israeli officials huffing and puffing for new superlatives for what they will do to Hamas, while still basically having done very little new for about a week. In other words, you know, all the military officials are like, you know, we're going to destroy the animals. And another official, we're going to slaughter the beasts. Another one, we're going to smear the streets with the blood of Hamas. And, you know, they're just out huffing and puffing each other, but they haven't done anything on the ground. I mean, yes, they've launched thousands of missiles and bombs, and they have killed thousands of Palestinian civilians, but have they taken out Hamas? No, they have not taken out Hamas. All they've actually done is shown the world the brutality of the Zionist response to Hamas terrorism. That's what has been accomplished here, which is not actually karma points for Israel at the moment. So Israel right now, in my assessment, is losing this war. They lost militarily by standing down and allowing Hamas to come in and commit acts of terrorism in order to spark this. Now they're losing morally. And when they go into Gaza, they're probably going to lose kinetically a lot of IDF troops there. A lot of tanks, armored vehicles will be exploded, as we say, with super bombs that have no doubt been engineered for many months, if not years in advance, on the streets of Gaza. And then Israel is going to face an attack probably from Hezbollah and probably from Iran. At the same time that more Palestinian civilians are dying, with their pictures and videos shown all over the world, with more condemnation from more countries, you see where this is going. None of this is good. By the way, in all of this, I've had some people asking me the question, well, what's your solution? Almost in a demanding way. What's your solution? And I've thought about this for a couple of days, and I have an answer for that. My solution? Treat all human beings with dignity. That's it. And Israel has not done that. Not by a long shot. Israel treats other human beings like animals. And they believe they have the right to do so because of Zionist supremacy. So my solution is treat all human beings with dignity, and you wouldn't have this giant open air prison. You wouldn't have, probably you wouldn't have any support in Palestine for Hamas. If people were treated with dignity and people had a sense of self-determination, why would they be terrorists? They wouldn't be. If people had work, and if they had, you know, jobs, and they had trade, and they had a sense of empowerment in their own lives, why would they want to be terrorists? They wouldn't. You know, dignity and peace are the answers to all of this, but that's exactly what Israel and the Zionists do not want to see. They do not want to see peace. They want to see extermination. And so they're going to set events in motion that I believe run the risk of actually seeing not only a much wider war, but ultimately, potentially, the fall of Israel itself. Now, I want to give credit to the author. His name is Jonathan Cook, whose story actually served as an interesting point of inspiration for today's podcast. And I want to be clear. His article appears on a website called declassifieduk.org. And I don't know anything about this website, and I'm not endorsing everything that is on this website, just to be clear. I don't know anything about it, and I'm not familiar with this author, but he has written something very profound, and I want to read it for you. And since I also like to always give credit where credit is due, I want to give him credit. His article is entitled "Lawless in Gaza: Why Britain and the West Back Israel's Crimes." And the subhead, as Western politicians line up to cheer on Israel as it starves Gaza's civilians and plunges them into darkness to soften them up before the coming Israeli ground invasion, it is important to understand how we reach this point and what it portends for the future. Again, Jonathan Cook is the author. And let me read this section for you. The siege of Gaza's 2.3 million Palestinians, imposed by Israel in 2007, following the election of Hamas to rule the enclave, allowed for all sorts of experiments. How could the population best be contained? What restrictions could be placed on their diet and lifestyle? How were networks of informers and collaborators to be recruited from afar? What effect did the population's entrapment and repeated bombardment have on social and political relations? And ultimately, how were Gaza's inhabitants to be kept subjugated and an uprising prevented? The answers to those questions were made available to Western allies through Israel's shopping portal. That's a metaphor. But items available included interception rocket systems, electronic sensors, surveillance systems, drones, facial recognition, automated gun towers, and much more, all tested in real-life situations in Gaza. Understand, Gaza is a giant experiment. It's a giant prison camp experiment. Jonathan Cook writes, Israel's standing took a severe dent from the fact that Palestinians managed to bypass this infrastructure of confinement last weekend, at least for a few days, with a rusty bulldozer, some hang gliders, and a sense of nothing to lose, which is part of the reason why Israel now needs to go back into Gaza with ground troops to show it still has the means to keep the Palestinians crushed. One of the fundamentals of international law, he writes, is a prohibition on collective punishment, which is retaliating against the enemy's civilian population, making them pay the price for the acts of their leaders and armies. Very obviously, Gaza is about as flagrant a violation of this prohibition as can be found. Even in quiet times, its inhabitants, 1 million of them children, are denied the most basic freedoms, such as the right to movement, access to proper health care, because medicines and equipment cannot be brought in, access to drinkable water, and the use of electricity for much of the day because Israel keeps bombing Gaza's power station. Israel has never made any bones of the fact that it is punishing the people of Gaza for being ruled by Hamas, which rejects Israel's right to have dispossessed the Palestinians of their homeland in 1948 and imprisoned them in overcrowded ghettos like Gaza. What Israel is doing to Gaza is the very definition of collective punishment. It is a war crime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks of every year for 16 years. And yet no one in the so-called international community seems to have noticed. Well, people are noticing now. And if anything, the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel has brought a spotlight to Gaza. Information about Gaza is now spreading like never before. I mean, that's all I've talked about for a week, for example. Many people are learning things about Gaza that they never knew, myself included. The plight of the Palestinian civilians is now being highlighted all over the world in ways that Israel had managed to suppress for many years because of their Zionist control over the Western media, where brutality against Palestinians was always covered up, never reported. That's changing now. That's changing because the United States is losing power on the world stage, losing power in its currency, the dollar, losing political power, and losing military power. And so now the narrative that Israel can do no wrong and that Israel can therefore commit war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people, that narrative is starting to crumble. And you're seeing it now even with the WHO, the United Nations, international medical groups, relief groups, and so on, calling out Israel for its brutality against Palestinian civilians and cutting off the water, siege warfare, cutting off the food, cutting off the electricity, bombing civilians while they're ordered to escape, to flee. It's like, yeah, try to flee, and then we're going to blow you up anyway. The narrative is crumbling. And increasingly, Israel is finding itself in the moral low ground of all of this. Now, having killed thousands more Palestinians than the number of Israelis who were killed by Hamas, with potentially tens of thousands of more deaths yet to come from Israel's ground assault. Israel has lost the moral high ground on this. So much so that even Anthony Blinken is telling Israel to allow humanitarian aid for God's sake, because it makes us look bad. It makes us look evil is essentially what Blinken is saying. Makes us look bad when you starve to death women and children and bomb refugees trying to flee. It makes us look bad, so could you just maybe stop that for a couple of days? That's the request from Blinken. And believe me, it really tears at the IDF and Netanyahu and all the Israeli leaders. It must be the hardest thing in the world for them to refrain from more ethnic cleansing for a couple more days, because they just want to go in there and just mass murder every living Palestinian that they can find. And it's tough. It's tough for them to put a pause on that. In the meantime, you notice what else is happening. Like I mentioned yesterday, Hamas is driving the OODA loop here. The OODA loop, it's the observation and reaction loop. Well, Hamas is maneuvering Israel and the United States right where they want them. Have you noticed that? Really astonishing that Hamas is maneuvering Israel into Gaza and will probably maneuver them right into the streets where they want the tanks, because that's where the super bombs have been planted, or they'll maneuver the troops right into the areas they want. You notice that Joe Biden is now going to visit Israel. So Hamas has maneuvered the president of the United States, well, the fake president, to Israel. And Hamas has lured two aircraft carriers, well, battle groups of the U.S. Navy, into the Mediterranean Sea. So think about this convergence. Where else have you seen ever a so-called terrorist group being able to pull in two aircraft carriers, the president of the United States, and the IDF into an area that can easily be hit by an Iranian nuclear weapon? Have you thought about that? What if this whole thing is a trap for the West? I think there are elements of this that are a trap. And what if Hezbollah is just waiting for the go signal? Maybe that go signal is, you know, nuclear detonation under the Mediterranean Sea ocean that destroys a significant portion of the U.S. naval fleet. Maybe it's a super bomb detonation that takes out some big portion of the IDF. Maybe it's a terrorist, a van with a nuke that drives into Tel Aviv when Joe Biden is visiting and sets it off and takes out Netanyahu and Biden together as an attack against the West. There are all kinds of possibilities here that very few people are considering. And it strikes me that Hamas created this situation. They are the ones that are still driving the OODA loop. And Western military and also political figures need, they'd better figure this out. They'd better get out of Hamas's OODA loop. And they need to start driving this themselves if they hope to have a chance, you know, to survive or to achieve victory or whatever. Then they need to determine, they need to force Hamas to respond to them, not the other way around. You know, if the IDF is going to have any hope in Gaza, then they have to set the terms of the engagement. You know, it's classic, Swensit, art of war. The war is won by those who determine the battlefield before the battle ever begins. Well, right now, Hamas is determining the battlefield. Again, classic art of war. Or I forgot, in English, Sun Tzu. But in Mandarin, in Chinese, it's Swensi. So anyway, you know, it's the ancient Chinese war general who wrote The Art of War. And what's one of the other principles of that book? Appear weak when you are strong, and appear strong when you are weak. So Hamas, by breaking through Israel's defenses, appeared strong when they were actually weak. They only had a few hundred terrorists break through, but it overran the IDF. But now Hamas is appearing weak to lure Israel into Gaza, when actually Hamas is probably very strong with super bombs and other booby traps ready to take out some significant portion of the Israeli military itself. I don't know why other people aren't seeing this. It just seems obvious to me. You know, Hamas is actually, believe it or not, in control right now of this situation. As astonishing as that may sound, they are in control because they are determining the loop of action and reaction. And Israel is reacting to Hamas. Now, if Israel is wise, it will cancel the ground invasion and pursue diplomacy. Peace and diplomacy. If Israel is wise, in my opinion, they would recognize the human dignity of all Palestinians, not the Hamas terrorists, obviously, but the non-affiliated Palestinian civilians, which is the vast majority of Palestinians. Their human dignity should be recognized, and that's the starting point for living together, coexistence, in peace, side by side, which can be done. We do it in America all day, every day. There's Palestinians and Jews living side by side in New York City right now, in Chicago, right in LA, right now, in every major city. There's Christians, Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, all living side by side. It can be done if you respect basic human dignity. That's what Israel should do. If Israel wants to escape the Hamas UDA trap, they should back away from this and begin negotiations and diplomacy, which Russia has offered to help make happen. Russia's willing to serve as the negotiating party in this, or at least a bridge between Israel and the Palestinians. And that seems fair, because Russia has had, frankly, very much pro-Israel, a pro-Israel stance for many years. Russia and Israel have very good relations, and yet Russia is calling for peace, and they might be a great party to choose for negotiating this and ending the bloodshed and backing away from the trap. I believe this is a trap that has been set for the U.S. military and for Israeli leaders and the IDF in particular. This all smells like a trap to me. So in wrapping this up, I want to reiterate my call for peace. I want to reiterate my principles, which I believe most of you share, which is that genocide is always wrong. Killing innocent women and children is always wrong. And engaging in actions that needlessly slaughter innocent civilians is also wrong. And that every human life has value, and that we must treat each other with dignity if we ever hope to coexist. And understand what you are seeing today, right now. Israel has been running an open air prison camp, an experiment to see how they could enslave and ultimately exterminate millions of people. And this is a pilot program for a global operation to exterminate most of the existing human race, if necessary. That's what the globalists are pulling off. They tried it with the vaccines. The vaccines did not work as well as they had hoped, because a lot of people discovered ivermectin and quercetin and zinc and so on. And a lot of people didn't take the shots. By the way, only 2% of Americans have taken the new jabs. Only 2%. 49 out of 50 people have said no. See, that's progress. And that's why the globalists are launching this new war. They need a new way to mass murder billions of people, and they hope that this is the means for them to achieve that. This is not really about Israel. This is about the survival of the human race. And if we allow the globalists to treat us the way that Israel treats the Palestinians, then none of us will survive. And those supporting Israel in its genocide, you should understand, you might as well say that you support, George Soros and Klaus Schwab and the WEF. If you're supporting Israel, you are supporting the globalist extermination of humanity, because Israel is running the pilot program for that. You should be supporting peace. You should be supporting humanity. That's what I support. So thank you for listening today. If you want to support our work here at naturalnews.com and brighttown.com, shop at healthrangerstore.com. And there we have, of course, certified, organic, laboratory-tested nutrition, foods, superfoods, storable foods, nutritional supplements, personal care products, everything from body soap, all fragrance-free, to laundry detergent, outstanding ingredients, beyond just eco-friendly. I mean, meticulously sourced products, custom formulated, many of them manufactured at our facility in Texas, and all laboratory-tested for heavy metals, for glyphosate, as well as E. coli, salmonella, yeast and mold tests. We have an entire lab, our own lab, to achieve all this, and also aflatoxin testing for the nuts and seeds that we sell. And we're adding atrazine testing, and then soon dioxin testing as well. Nobody else does that. We can confidently say that we sell the cleanest foods, superfoods, and nutritional supplements in the world, subjected to more testing and scrutiny than any other manufacturer and retailer in the entire world, without any question. So if you want clean products that support your health and nutrition to help you make it through and navigate all this insanity of our world, well, support us at healthrangerstore.com. And if you want to be prepared, let me give a shout out to arkseedkits.com, A-R-K. Arkseedkits.com gives you non-GMO heirloom seeds that you can save the seeds and, of course, plant them generation after generation for most varieties. Check out what they have available at arkseedkits.com. And then just get prepared. Make sure you've got your first aid, your food, your self-defense, your communications. You know, check out the satellite phone store if you don't yet have a satellite phone. That's SAT123.com. Make sure you've got your body armor squared away for self-defense purposes only, of course. And finally, I would say one of the best ways to be prepared is to treat other people with dignity. Don't call for mass killings. Don't go out and announce that you think everybody should be slaughtered. In fact, you know, I was thinking about that professor from Washington University. I don't recall his name. This professor who said that, you know, he thinks it's time to do the ethnic cleansing of all Palestinians because he says they're not human. He says they're animals. Man, I would sure not want to be that guy right now. Can you imagine if you went on Twitter and just pissed off every Palestinian, including maybe some Hamas agents in the U.S. You just pissed off Hamas and they put out, what's it called, like a fatah on you? I don't know if I'm using that term correctly. They put out a fatah on you and they come kill you, man. I mean, you know how you avoid that situation? Don't call for ethnic cleansing. Like, there's a tip. Don't call for ethnic cleansing. And if people condemn you for not calling for genocide, you tell them to go bleep themselves, which is what I've been telling a lot of people recently, because a lot of people are pressuring me. Oh, you need to call for genocide. You need to call for ethnic cleansing. You need to call for wiping out all Palestinians. I'm like, nope. You're freaking bonkers. I didn't realize that you were a genocidal maniac. I am not going to call for genocide. I don't care how much pressure I get from people. All I know is that you went crazy. You know, the people telling me to call for that. I'm not calling for genocide. I'm not calling for ethnic cleansing. I'm calling for peace. I'm calling for human dignity for everybody, including the Israelis, but including the Palestinians too. I'm calling for dignity, okay? Because that's how we stop the suffering. That's how we get back to living in a world where our children aren't, you know, murdered and slaughtered in the middle of the night, and bombs aren't raining down on our heads in the middle of the night. And we're not hunted down by people that we pissed off online by calling for ethnic genocide. Again, whoever that professor is at Washington University, that dude needs to probably move and change his name. I would not want to be that guy right now. As I said before in a tweet, I said, this is a paraphrase, trying to remember it exactly. I said, if we can't save Israel by preserving our values, then we've lost our humanity. I mean, if you think you're saving Israel, but you turn into raging genocidal animals in the process, then what have you actually saved? What do you have left? You've lost your humanity. You've lost, you know, God's grace, for one thing. If you become a monster, then what have you saved? Nothing. If you can't get through this with your humanity intact, then what the hell are you doing? Then you're just as bad as those you condemn. If you can't operate with basic pro-human principles, then you're on the wrong team. I'm on team humanity. I don't know what team all these other people are on. I don't know, team genocide or something. Get on the side of team humanity and realize that what, like I said before, what Israel's doing to Palestine is what the globalists plan to do to all of us. It's a pilot program. Spread the word. And thank you for listening today. I pray for all of humanity. I pray for Muslims as well. I pray for all children of God, every human being on this planet. I pray for peace. I pray for prosperity. I pray for understanding and dignity. And I pray for an end to violence and suffering. That's my prayer. Those are my principles. I will never join genocide. I will never allow myself to be used as an instrument of hatred against other human beings. I'm here to help inform and nourish and heal humanity. And that's it. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here. God bless you all. And I'm not running interviews right now because it just doesn't go with, you know, the holy war topic that we're covering. So I'm holding a lot of interviews and I'll play them where it's appropriate, but today is not that day. Thank you for listening. Take care.